And welcome back to the Masters of Modern MMCast podcast. This is part two of our Murders at Karlov Manor set review. I'm proud that I got it right this time. We've selected all the different cards we think could see play, or people are talking about seeing play in Modern. There's a wide selection of cards, as any Ravnica based set is. There's some heaters in there. I love coming back to Ravnica because there's always like, oh, this set's powerful, and there's characters I recognize. It's a world I love going to. This time there is a murder afoot. And if you're wondering what happened in the story, we also have our set, our story recap. I think I put it all together as one long video this time. It's on TikTok as individual videos. If it's not up here yet, but it should be being uploaded to this YouTube channel as well. This is part two. Before we get into it, we do want to do a quick shout out. If you're going to Magic Con Chicago in February, me and Ben are actually hosting our own cool events there. So on Sunday in the Creator Arena, which is like where the MTG Ambassador stuff is happening, we both have a thing. Mine's Sunday at 10 a.m. And if you're a fan of murder mysteries, if you're a fan of Werewolf or the game Mafia, or any type of social deduction games, it's a Ravnica-based social deduction game where each player who's playing, I think up to 20 players per pod, will get a different secret character from one of the Ravnican characters, everyone from Niv-Mizzet to Teyza to Trastani to Proft, the new character, Kellen, Kaya, and a secondary card that says, are you the murderer or aren't you the murderer? And then everyone's trying to figure out who the murderer is, what night the murderer kills a new person every day. It's a really fun game. It's based on other games I've designed in the past and have a lot of fun playing, and it's going to be fun for everyone to check out. And it's open for people to play. It's anyone who joins, as long as you get in time before the pod starts, you're able to join the pod, and we'll be firing them until they kick us out. And then the second event we're doing is Ben's hosting Chaos Drafts. Ben, what's that look like?
I will be at Alex's event, just so you guys know. Like, we will be able to play all of those, you know, moments together. I will enjoy that. Mine is a Chaos Draft, which is a kind of draft where you take all of these packs from all of the different years of Magic, last 30 years of Magic. And you string together a bunch of packs and you do a draft, and a bunch of my friends, including Alex and other creators like that, are awesome, right? You know, like everybody from Shivam to, you know, Talia, Joe Johnson, like folks that we hang out with all the time. They love this. And so we get together and we do this big draft. And this time I wanted to kind of include a bunch of very fun old packs. So stuff from like Mercadian Masks era, maybe even like, you know, Urza's Saga, possibly some really wild stuff, and collector boosters from the new sets, because they're very fun. We're going to do a big draft, and whoever wins the whole thing will hoist the trophy. And then also we're going to redraft the rares. So like, if somebody opens a Gaia's Cradle, that person, I guess, will draft the Gaia's Cradle first, is the point. So it'll be really fun, but come hang out. It'll be a bunch of my friends, and with some amazing packs, and I can't wait to do that. It's like my favorite thing in the whole world.
Absolutely. And once again, thank you to, you know, our patrons, everyone who's sponsoring the show. If you are looking for any cool stuff made by Kess, including the games like the ones we're talking about, but ones we make, check out the link below for the Amazon page. You can see all the cool stuff we're doing there, including a new Sonic game, as well as Drop Dot Dice and Foam Dice and all this other cool stuff. All right. Andrag the Quake Mole, 2 red green legendary mole god, 8/4. When Andrag the Quake Mole becomes blocked, untapped each creature you control, after this combat phase, there's an additional combat phase. And then you can spend 3 red, red, green, green, and Andrag must be blocked each combat this turn if able.
Oh my gosh.
So there is some infinite combos with this card. There's a card that prevent all damage dealt by creatures this turn for 3 mana by two creatures during combat this turn, something along those lines, that if you can cast that into then the extra combat must be blocked effect, makes it so that you have infinite combat steps. So if you have anything that like takes advantage of attacking in any way, you can go infinite with. To me, that's not a Modern thing. That's like, if you're building this as your commander deck, that's a cool thing to do. I think the fun thing to do with this as a commander, or as a Modern thing, is that this is a 4-mana 8/4 that your opponents can either choose to block and then you get extra attack steps, or they're taking 8 to the face on turn 5.
Yeah, I think there's actually probably better stuff for Modern than you're acknowledging here, because I think that there's enough weird interactions with creatures that exist in green-red that you can prevent damage. The seven mana ability must be blocked is pretty hard to accomplish. I don't think
I'm ever activating that ability in Modern. I mean, the ever is a strong word, but I think it's rare that I'm activating that ability in Modern.
But there's plenty of things that are like one mana creature must be blocked, draw a card type of deals, or two mana, like where I could see casting this and then having tricks, and you're like, it's going to make it so that you have to block with your crappy creature, and I draw a card off my cantrip, now I untap and I do it again. Like, it cost me four to get this in play in the first place, so I in theory have at least four mana to burn the next turn. So between a couple cantrips or like a couple spells, I feel like there's a decent chance that with the right cards in your deck, you might just be able to win the next turn. Like,
well, that's kind of, I think you don't, I don't know if like Modern ostensibly is a 16 life format, right?
Yeah.
If I'm playing other aggressive creatures with this creature, they can't block it. Like, you win if you attack with this, because they either don't block it, and then they're taking eight to the face. Not to mention whatever else you're attacking with. Like, how many decks can win in Modern against a deck that's trying to attack them, taking eight damage to the face? and then if they do have to block it, your other creatures are getting in for two combat steps. And or they have to block four power, otherwise they're just going to get hit with an 8/4 again that they have to block again, causing the it's kind of a just like a beating. Now, four mana for a doesn't do anything until the next turn when you attack with it spell isn't the best thing on the planet, especially now that Fury is no longer in the format. So the fact that this is red and green doesn't mean you can pitch it to Fury, but I don't know, if I untap with this, I don't know how to lose.
what's the name of the legendary land, the one from Kamigawa, that makes the creature have haste?
Hall of the Bandit Lord, which is Godo's. It's Godo's Hall. Enters battlefield tapped, but you can pay three life when you tap it, add one mana to your mana pool, and then any creature that's spent on gains haste.
Okay, so that to me, when I think about Modern, like if you're trying to just go nuts, play that with this. Like, sure. turn three off of an accelerant in some capacity, a bird or like a, you know, freaking Ignoble Hierarch or something.
Yeah,
like,
Ignoble Hierarch into this is a 9/5 that if they block, you swing for again another 9/5. You dome them for 9, basically, or they have to have 5.
You clear their blocker because it doesn't have trample, and then you get in for 9. Like, yeah. When I think about Hall of the Bandit Warlord decks, this comes top of mind for me when it's just like, this card's absurd. Like,
this could all be like Christmas land, but like, it's such a dumb amount of power with all upside that I'm excited to try it.
I guess where it's like, where you compare this as you go, okay, like, why is Grease Fang not a deck in Modern? It's like, well, it's disruptible. That's why. And it's like, yeah.
Well, you use the graveyard. Graveyard hate is like is a lot easier to come by in Modern. Artifact hate is also not that bad in Modern. And like,
yeah,
to be honest, if I faced against a Grease Fang deck in Modern, there's some decks that probably just straight up scoop to it.
Yeah. And also, but I think the thing about this card and your point earlier that made a lot of sense to me was, if I don't accelerate and I just cast this on turn four and then I just attack the next turn, there's a decent amount of the time it's just going to destroy my opponent. Because like, they'll lose their blocker and I'll get another attack step, or they'll just take eight.
And there's a lot, like this is an FNM deck. Like, I would not tell anyone to try and take this to an RCQ or whatever, but like, take it to FNM. see what happens.
That's a lot of deck to me.
Yeah. All right. Next card is Urgent Necropsy. I have no idea how to say that. Necropsy? Necropsy?
Necropsy? It's like,
I've not said it too many times. Well, it's like an autopsy.
Necropsy. It's like necromania, necrophiliac, necro something.
Those are the ones you went with. All right. Two black green instant mythic. As an initial cost to cast the spell, collect evidence X, where X is the total mana value of the permanence the spell targets. Destroy up to one target artifact, up to one target creature, up to one target enchantment, and up to one target planeswalker. Some interesting things to this card. One is what collect evidence is. So collect evidence is you have to exile mana value worth of cards from your graveyard equal or more than what it's asking of you. So say you're targeting three things and it's a 2-drop, a 3-drop, and a 1-drop. that 2-drop, 3-drop, 1-drop has a total mana value of 6. You have to exile from your graveyard enough cards where the total CMC of the cards that you've exiled equals above 6. So another 2-drop, a 3-drop, a 5-drop. What's cool also with this one is like these types of effects, it is all up twos. So you no longer have the decimate problem where it had to have targets for all four options. Otherwise, it was uncastable. It is also an instant.
Green red 2 for a sorcery from way back that was destroy target artifact, destroy target creature, destroy target enchantment, and destroy target land, which means if you ever couldn't target all four, or you tried to, like you had the Christmas and they like sacked the creature in response, the spell fizzled.
Yeah, so I think because you're more than one, the biggest issue is if you didn't have an enchantment in play, the card was incastable, right? Like,
yes, so basically, but up 2 solves the issue, which is the point.
Exactly. So a lot of people are talking about this card. People are going back and forth on how great it is. In some ways, like obviously 4 mana destroy 2 of these things at once is like pretty powerful. The fact that you have to collect evidence is a drawback, having to exile those cards. Now, in the world of 1 mana land cycling, is every deck is playing 4 of those cards in their deck, so you just start playing with
trolls and Lorien Reveal
the Elephants or whatever in your graveyard. Like, I don't think hitting it that is that difficult. Though this does get pretty bricked by specifically Murktide. I think it's an interesting removal spell. I think it's like another in the line of 3-4 mana really good black green Jund type removal spells. I think it's just below the line of playable in Modern. It's probably just above the line for playability in Pioneer, though.
Wait, is Murktide, if you cast a Murktide with like 5 counters, so like a 7 mana Murktide, that has 7 CMC at that point?
CMC is always the same, but regardless
of 2.
No. It's whatever it's dealt. It's CMC is the same. Its mana value is the same on the card at all times.
So if it delves 3, you're saying it costs 7 always. It never changes.
Yeah. So like delve doesn't reduce the mana value of a card. You use exiled cards instead of paying mana for that effect.
I see. Hmm. Okay. Yeah, I mean, my feeling is that in the sort of Death Shadow world of cards that, you know, are cheap or expensive, like cheated costs, like making it work, I guess, for your game plan, there's a version of this where it's a really good spell. It's like a haymaker. Like, it's a 2 or a 3 for 1, and the things you're exiling from your yard are all supposed to be there because you have, you know. There's also the version of this where it's not as good, and like it's 4 mana to get rid of 1 thing. Like, that's what you have to assume this card's going to be when you cast it. Just only because if you don't have the cards in your graveyard or they don't have the thing that you want in that matchup. Right. So are you comfortable spending 4 mana at instant speed to get rid of 1 thing? Like, what if this kills a Dragon's Rage Channeler? And like you're just like at 8 life and like this kills it. Like, are you okay with that?
Does it allow me to not die? Maybe. Yeah. Right. I mean, like, I guess to me, the worst case scenario is you just like on turn, you're playing an opponent that just like plays a bunch of creature threats and you have this in your hand and you're like, I don't have anything in my graveyard. You have 3 creatures in play. I can only kill 1 of them. If I did get something in my graveyard, I'm just losing. And I have this versus a better removal spell or just Damnation, which is not playable in the format. So to me, that's the bigger issue. Is like,
yeah,
on the other hand, like against like this kills a rhino, no problem. Like one of the 2 rhinos, I guess, without too much effort.
I think you just circled the biggest issue, which is that like if you're in a creature matchup, you want it to get more than 1 creature. You don't really necessarily want to split it up between all of the different things. And I think that's probably where this card suffers maybe the most.
I would like this card a lot more if it killed a land.
Yeah.
Like literally if it just killed a land or killed a land instead of even Planeswalker, I would like this card more. Because like then I'm at least getting them on a land and a creature that like has value to it. I would like that more. Yeah, that's
I feel like what this needs to say is like similar to that Factor Fiction clone card we talked about, where it's like do these things,
a creature for each thing you killed or something.
Or it's like for each thing you didn't kill, you make a creature. So it's like 4 mana instant speed, you kill nothing, you get a 4/4. But if you kill all of them, you get nothing. Or so you probably, if you kill 3, you get a 1/1. Like, that's what it should be. Because like the upside should be, I kill your creature for 4 instant speed and I get a 3/3. That's like what this should be. You should get like the upside of a 3/3 creature if you just 1/1 at 4 mana. Because 4 is a lot. Instant speed to kill something, it's a lot. And you have to do the extra hoop to jump through. This card's bad. We should move on.
next card is Leyland of the Guild Pact. Hybrid green white, hybrid green blue, hybrid green black, hybrid green red, enchantment. If Leyland of the Guild Pact is in your opening hand, you may begin the game with it on the battlefield. Each non-land permanent you control is all colors. Lands you control are every basic land type in addition to their other types. We have a new Leyline. We have a 5-color Leyline.
This card is quite good, is what I would say.
I saw...
Like with a W? This is like the card that I feel like on some level I might circle as the best card in the set, only because the upside is so high. It feels like the possibilities of what this card is going to do are absurd. Even like I saw you commenting on the same Twitter post that or X post that I was commenting on in terms of like best things you can do, right? Like, I feel like there are enough things that are absurd. If this is in your opening hand already, it's enough. Not to mention the fact that any pitch cards that exist, it's all colors. This is a 5-color card that if you have extra copies in your opening hand that, you know, don't make the battlefield.
I didn't think of that, but that is true. Is that the like it has Omnath benefits of this casting. Is your force of negation. The extra one you draw is really easy to get rid of.
And it's for sure, if you're doing it, you have 4. So that means that very likely it's a solitude deck. It's a grief deck, like highly likely that in your opening hand, if you've got one of these, a grief and a second one of these, you're griefing and putting it in play. And that's because it's May, right? You may start the game with it. And you can keep the second one in your hand. Isn't that how it works? Yeah. So, I mean, like, I feel like that, you know, whether it's Tribal Flames or...
I think there's like a cool Leyline of the Guild Pact, Omnath, like playing Leyline Binding and like just has Valakut and Primeval Titan in the deck, maybe. Like, because that's the other thing this thing does, right? Is it turns Valakut on a turn earlier because it turns Valakut into a mountain. So you can get it turned on turn 6 versus turn 7. Prismatic Omen decks used to play it to like speed the deck up a little bit, and this does that out of your opening hand, but then fixes your mana. It's pitchable to force negation.
Doesn't it also make like Bloom Tender cast Primeval Titan on turn 3?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, Bloom Tender. Yeah, you can play Bloom Tender, and the Primeval Titan is a really cool thing you could do here. It also like on a different direction, which I've seen people talked about, is it's like a really sick Leyline. Not Leyline. Well, it is a Leyline, but it's a sick play with Nykthos decks. Like for mono green devotion Nykthos combos, because every one of those mana symbols is a green one, so it's 4 green devotion. So anything that needs green devotion is like turned on really quick, which is another cool feature to it. So yeah, I think this card's really good. I think it's a little worse than people are saying it is, right? I think it like isn't as bonkers. And I think your deck needs to be taking advantage of it on purpose. But I think those decks exist in Modern. I think the fact that Leyline Binding is like the best played removal spell in the format is proof enough that there's a home for it.
Yeah, I also think that like Leylines over the years have always been playable in the right situations. And it often has to do with like, do you get any upside from having this mono colored enchantment in play? This is a 5-color enchantment makes your board better. It's not a defensive card like most of them are. It makes your board just generally better. So like I think there's probably upside with this card we haven't seen, and there's upside coming is the point. I think there'll be printed cards that do not account for Leyline Binding in 3 years that will make this card absurd. Right.
And there'll be some deck like pitch cards, endurance, force of vigor, subtlety, like force of negation are all in the top 10 most played cards in Modern, grief in top 20. Then you add to the fact that you like it combos with Primeval Titan to go quicker. Yeah. And it like makes one of the best removal spells in the format, Leyline, not Leyline Binding, yeah, Leyline Binding, right? Yeah, Leyline Binding, a one mana removal spell on turn one. You play land, and then you have like one of the best removal spells ever printed available to you is like just bonkers. And that's not to mention all the other things you can do.
This card's so messed up. I mean, like, but
it is Christmas land, right? Like you have to get this. It's not Christmas land, but it's relatively inconsistent. But
I guess the flip side would be this. Imagine this for a second. We have talked many times on this show about Chancellor of the Tangle from the new Phyrexia cycle. If it's in your opening hand, you can exile, you can reveal it, and it's a like a 6/7 reach for 7, but it adds a green to your mana pool in your first main phase. Now, if getting that in your opening hand was so good that it was always consistent, then that card would be a staple because every modern deck would have 2 mana on turn one. That's how it would work. Same with Simeon Spirit Guide. Like,
Simeon Spirit Guide's banned.
It was, yes, yeah. But you understand my point, which is like Christmas Land is what we're talking about. It's
the big difference is the pitch capabilities of this. The fact that this turns every pitch card all at once live in your hand with zero amount of effort is what makes this better than those cards. Chancellor of the Tangle, Endurance and Force of Vigor are good, but they're sideboard cards, right? Then it's just dead in your hand. And the decks that played it the best, to be honest, were ones that had Faithless Looting in it back in the day. So I think this card is better than that by a lot. It'll be interesting to see because what's interesting about this versus a lot, like there aren't a lot of playable ley lines that are main deck ley lines, right? That's the thing that doesn't really exist. And this could be the first one. Like this is the ley line of singularity that you were playing with back in the day, right? Like,
what's the best main deck ley line? Is it ley line of sanctity? Is it like, it's not void. That's a sideboard card. It's the green one.
I think technically Leyline of the Void is because there's combo decks that win with it in Legacy.
So maybe that's the one. Yeah, the green one that gets like extra toughness or mana.
Like all creatures get like tap for additional mana or something like that. Isn't that a thing in a format at some point?
I could see that being a like turbo card. But yeah, I mean, I would agree that in general,
there's the Sarah's Sanctum ley line decks in Legacy as well, where you're playing just all of the ley lines and then you play Sarah's Sanctum and Opulescence and you just like on turn one can play like 3/5/5 or you have like 5/4/4s in play or whatever. And then you have Hexproof and their graveyard is exiled Kellen Inquisitive Prodigy, 2 green blue, human fairy detective, 3/4 flying vigilance. When Kellen Inquisitive Prodigy attacks, destroy up to 1 target artifact. If you controlled that permanent, draw a card. But it has adventure. Tail the Suspect, green blue, adventure, sorcery, investigate. You may play an additional land this turn. Here's some few things about this card I'd like to point out. One, I've never seen an adventure spell in Modern that was in blue green, and one of the abilities was pay 2 mana for a permanent to put into play, and you get to play in a land and obsessively get a draw card that isn't maybe worth looking at. So like every Cascade deck looks at this as a thing that is pretty feasible, right? This gets you to turn 4, turn 3, guaranteed lands in play. It also provides you with a nice flying vigilance 3/4/4/4 that has a card draw engine built into it, or a removal spells for artifacts that your opponents may control.
This feels generally good for Modern. The front side, obviously being blue green, like it's a strong ability, reminds me of, you know, cards that we've seen like Growth Spiral and other things that have just like been decent value cards. But the fact that if you draw this on the back end, it's a 3/4 flying vigilance means that you are drawing a card that has a decent amount of reach as a finisher, even if you don't have this in your opening hand, which is the best case scenario for basically every single adventure card we've seen, right? Like Bonecrusher Giant is the interactions different than Ramp, but it's the same idea. That's like, that's the whole reason that card is good.
I mean, like the Cascade decks are just so powerful, and this is another tool that's good in them, and it gives them a different angle of being able to get lands into play, gives them an angle to like have an artifact and be able to draw cards off of it, which is nice. And then I think the body is not one to snuff at, like a 3/4 flying for like this blocks a lot of things in the format that are in the way, and being flying and vigilance is nothing, and being able to destroy artifacts either that you control to draw cards or that they control to as a removal spell, I think is like a nice little versatile package and literally the current main character of Magic at the moment. So
I agree. I like this card a lot. Yeah.
All right. Next card is Assassin's Trophy. So brand new in the set, green, black, instant, destroy target permanent and opponent controls. Its controller may search their library for a basic land card and put it onto the battlefield and then shuffle. So this is kind of like, it's like,
Abrupt Decay. It's similar. I mean, obviously it's like it's like a combination of like an Abrupt Decay and like all those like land effects.
Sadly, like it's interesting because it kills creatures, right? Which makes it a little bit more interesting than the green one that I'm forgetting the name of right now, which is
Besieger. Right?
Yeah, it's like a more versatile Besieger. It can stop Tron decks. Obviously, those are doing really well right now. It's an instant, which is helpful. And like Abrupt Decay can't kill 4-drops, which this, you know, is pretty relevant right now with stuff like Murktide. I think this is the exact card needed to make Jund good again in Modern. I think that's really, this is what they've been looking for.
It's also notable that when you destroy the thing, the land comes in untapped, which I think it makes it really good, right? Like I think that is, you know, a very powerful card. To me, well, this
sadly,
is...
Sadly, you can't target your own thing. So it is technically all downside for that.
So you can't get your own. Okay, that's fair, but I still it's not upside for you, but I guess, I mean, it's relevant in terms of if you're getting targeted by this card, like how good it is, you get your land untapped is the point. Like it's a unique difference in the design of this card than most. But yeah, I mean, I don't know if it compares to the like best removal spells we've seen, but it feels like the best version of this card we've seen, and I would play it.
Yeah, I think like could be, you know, maybe a C in the set, maybe like a B plus, maybe. All right, next card. Drag the Canal, blue, black, instant, create a 2/2 white and blue detective creature token. If a creature died this turn, you gain 2 life. Surveil 2 and then investigate. So this is blue and a black to make a 2/2. But if you have the creature die, you get to also gain 2 life, surveil 2, and investigate. So you get to like draw a card, scry, gain 2 life, just all of the things.
It's a lot. It feels like a limited card to me more probably than a constructed card. This is like a really sweet value card.
It is a rare instant. It is an instant. And it's rare, so it's not meant for limited, really.
It's a rare. Okay, that's fair. Yeah, I mean, it's very good. Obviously, surveil is a good ability, getting a 2/2, it's an instant. I never like the conditional if a creature has died thing. It's never like Morbid has never been as much my vibe, but I think there's pretty strong.
Imagine upside. You just sacrifice grief dies, you exile a card from their hand, you cast this at instant speed, you get a 2/2 into play, you surveil 2, you get a card draw engine with the clue token, and you stabilize a little bit by gaining 2 life.
Yeah, I like this card. It's got a lot of upside. The value is pretty off the charts.
It might be a little bit of a trap. The fact that it's an instant spell, not a creature spell, though, I think is really interesting, right? I think that's one of the things I like about it, and the fact that it's instant. Insidious Roots, green, black, enchantment. Creature tokens you control have tap to add 1 mana of any color. Whenever one or more creature cards leaves your graveyard, create a 0/1 plant token. Then put a +1/+1 counter on each plant you control.
This card is very good. This card, I don't know if this card is absurd in Modern by any means, but this card is just very good in general for strategies that want to be doing this. Like, yep. There are so many in so many formats that are like exiling cards from graveyards to make tokens in some capacity and then want to ramp. Like
in my head, though, like there's like a weird Bloodghast, like... Because the fact that it gives the plants it makes the ability to tap for mana, right? So like if you're able on turn 1 to generate some amount of cards in your graveyard, and then on turn 2 get this into play, and then have cards leave your graveyard, and then on turn 3 start doing more of that and looping it and using the mana you're generating and making, like it is like a weird engine builder that plays with cards that are already really good.
That's why I'm saying, though, that I think that in Modern, you would be describing a linear sequence of cards that you already know that is really unfair for that to be good. That already, like, grindy things that aren't that already exist. Whereas in Commander, what you're describing is like it just goes into decks that have extraordinarily powerful commanders and sequences that are already very good. Yeah.
I think this is a Commander staple tomorrow. I think any green black deck basically wants this card. But I what's interesting to me, well, I mean, for this podcast purposes, like what's needed for this to see Modern play. And I don't know if I agree that this is not, like, I think there's a feasible shell around this. This is like a very powerful thing because it ramps you, it builds you a full army alongside of it, and it does it for free, right? Like, having things leave your graveyard, that includes Delve, that includes things returning from the graveyard for whatever reason, that includes the new mechanic, which is what this is based on, right? This wants you to use it during, not Discover, but whatever the new mechanic is. It's not that hard to have things get exiled from your graveyard and then to have them ramp. I mean, like, obviously this is like no longer a good card, but like Lingering Souls with this card is insane, right? Like, getting the ability to like pay two black mana to put three tokens into play. You get 2/1/1 flyers and a 0/1. You get 2/1/1 flyers and a 1/2, and all three of them on the next turn tap for 3 mana on top of how much mana you had that turn.
No, it's extraordinary for sure. I mean, I guess the front end of this card, just creature tokens you control have tapped unwind mana of any color, like without any of the other stuff in general, can fit into probably a lot of shells that you can come up with. And right, so like, the back end just makes it even more nuts.
Yeah, I think like the issue this card would maybe run into is that it like does the deck function without it. But I think like the cards you're listing that are good with it are all good cards that maybe there's a home. Now, I do think this is a card that like is hurt by like Graveyard Hate. But what's nice about it against Graveyard Hate is that Graveyard Hate triggers it, right? Like, you worst case scenario, you're getting a 1/1, all your plant tokens are getting an additional +1/+1 counter, and you're getting an additional 0/1 that can then be used to tap for mana so that you can rebuild. So I think even like the fact that Graveyard Hate could be an issue for this deck is maybe not as bad as you would think.
I would agree. Yeah.
I think there's something interesting there that could be cool to play with. All right, next card is Breakout. Red and green, look at the top 6 cards of your library. You may reveal a creature card from among them. If that card has mana value 2 or less, you may put it on the battlefield, and it gains haste until end of turn. If you didn't put it, if you didn't put the revealed card onto the battlefield this way, put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. So, one, a red and a green. You reveal 6 cards. There's a Mercipurion in there.
Bro, I already was going there in my head. You had to cut me off. You had to throw it at me and just wreck me on that. I mean, you know, that was the first thing that came to mind for me.
Like, when I read this card, I put it on this list of cards that we're reviewing today for that. At minimum, that is a thing that this card's able to do.
I mean, if you're already in the like 2 mana creatures that come in to create 2 mana, you know, why my brain is blanking on the hybrid card, but like the old, you know, that old card.
Yeah, you cast this, you find a Burning Tree Emissary. You put Burning Tree Emissary into play. You make a red and a green. Then you cast this again because you had 2 in hand, and then you find the Mercipurion that's in.
That's actually very sick, I have to tell you. Burning and like Hidden Herbalist, which obviously creates green. So you can't cast one of these off of it. But like, I have continued recently brewing many decks off of like my Superior nonsense. There was one card, by the way, you and I never talked about it. It's from, I'll tell you right now. I was on an airplane like 2 weeks ago.
What's the best thing that you didn't play for 2 mana?
I mean, Superior's quite good. So there's a card that
is quite good. The words that I would use to describe your Superior.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a card from the new set from Rival. From, it's not Rivals, but from Ixalan, Lost Caverns. And it is a Guardian of the Great Door, and I don't think it's good, but in the Collected Company Aether Vial version of the deck, it's a 4/4 flyer for white that states, as an additional cost to cast the spell, tap 4 untapped artifacts, creatures, and or lands you control. And I started trying to brew around it, because obviously, you know, flashing in a 5/6 Superior is probably about as good as flashing in a 4/4 flyer. like, this is an angel, right? So, yeah. And if you can flip one off of a collected company, you're in business. Obviously, it gets worse with the Burning Tree Emissary casting things plan. But if you're going just, you know, full shenanigans to just try to get the best things you can off of non-casting, a 4-4 flyer for two is pretty good.
Yeah. And plus, like, if you just have, like, some good hate bears in your deck that you're just using this to find, like you play with a bunch of 2-mana good stuff. And then you have like a random Mir Superior in there that you get to just like break out and crack someone in for. And what I do like about this is it stays in play, right? It's not return it to your hand at end of turn, sacrifice it. I also like that if you find a creature that isn't a 2-mana spell, you still get it.
Right. Yeah, I think the thing for me about this when I read Breakout, we're talking about the Mir Superior plan. Like Breakout is a good card in general. I think there's a lot of cool stuff with this. But as it pertains to what we are describing, basically they haven't printed another obvious, like they haven't thrown back to Mir Superior yet in a significant way. In the same way that we saw the hunted creature in this set,
yeah.
They haven't given us the next version for 2CMC that is slightly different, but is like the same. And the minute they do, the minute you have like the same idea of like overpowered thing for two, then the deck we're talking about actually becomes a real deck. Because there's so many support pieces now between all these different sets that have come out, especially the fact that this is green red and Burning Tree is green red, that already on its own, the problem is you just need more Superiors. Like that 4-4 I just told you about, you can't really play it. You can, but it's like very bad. If you ever draw one, it's horrible. But like, if you just had another Superior, like this card goes to the well. Like it's pretty good. There's a decent chance on turn two, this is Mir Superior. So it's a 5/6.
Yeah. It's time, Ben. This is it. Make it happen. No more lies. White, blue, instant, counter target spell unless its controller pays 3. If that spell is countered this way, exile it instead of putting it into your owner's graveyard. This is a blue-white mana leak that exiles.
Like, I'm going to be honest with you, when you were talking about Mir Superior just now and you said no more lies, I thought that was like actually your comment about Mir Superior. You're like, no more lies.
This is what Mir I'm going to cast in response to your Mir Superior. And then you're going to be like, too bad. This only cost me 2. This didn't cast me any mana. So I have the 3 mana to pay for this.
They said mana leak was too good for standard for so many years. And we got all the worst. We got all the bad versions. Like we got a million bad versions of. What are all those cards? Like Rune Snag. We got Squelch. Yeah, one of those bad cards. They're always like blue one miscalculations that don't have the cool upside of cycling. It's always like blue one counter unless they pay 2. And now we have blue white unless they pay 3 and it exiles. Now, granted, you know, blue white is harder to cast than just blue colorless, but still, this card's very good.
Yeah.
let's be honest.
Yeah. I mean, do I think this is going to see play in Modern? I don't know. I think like in Standard, this is obviously a staple. I think this is safer to print in Standard than Mana Leak because of the 2-color feature. So it's not going to be in every blue deck. You have to be playing blue white. I think this card's very sweet. I'm excited to see it see play. I'm excited to play it myself in Standard. I think in Pioneer, this is very cool. I think in Modern, Mana Leak isn't playable. Counterspell exists. Exiling a thing is not a thing to laugh at, though, like especially against like the decks that are currently out there that like are regurgitating things out of the graveyard regularly. So that's helpful. But I think your other graveyard hate stronger. I really love this card. I think it's very cool. I'm sad that it's not a Modern card. I don't think.
I would agree. Yeah, I think the fact that Mana Leak is not a Modern card makes this card feel worse, because as much as I think that the exile feature is cool, it is not castable off blue one, which in that format is very important. So I think this card's dope. It'll be great for Standard, but not
Modern. All right, so this next card is the card that Ben sent to me in the mail after I started taking on his Mir Superior vibes, his persona, and that is Cease and Desist. The Cease side, it's a split card. Cease is 1 and a black green instant. Exile up to 2 target cards from a single graveyard. Target player gains 2 life and draws a card. And then the desist side is 4 green white hybrid sorcery. Destroy all artifacts and all enchantments.
So 6 mana destroy. Okay, so Tranquility is just enchantments. Artifacts is Shatterstorm, I guess. And so
four mana exists, but really, yeah.
And for two mana, you get to exile two cards from a single graveyard, which is
target cards
as well. Yeah, so significant. And but it's also target player gains two and draws a card. So you so you can exile cards from their graveyard and you get to gain the two and draw the card?
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, Cease is pretty good.
Like I think Cease on its own is like a card that's like not like just underplayable in Modern. But like if you're looking for like a 15th sideboard card, I would not begrudge anyone playing Cease, especially if you're like in black and you need like some type of like one extra card against graveyard decks and you're like not quite there, but then you really want something that's also going to be playable against burn, because like you're like kind of like weak to that, and this is like a good little hedge against both. But then add Desist, which is like not the most, like would not be playable in Modern by itself, but because the first half is there, and I would consider playing the first half in Modern, I'm definitely considering it now that I also have like, oh, am I a Jund deck that can go long and I can just like eventually against an artifact deck or an enchantment deck like cast this six drop to like destroy all artifacts and enchantments? Maybe.
Alex loves like Jund. That's like, if you guys are not clear, he's a Jund truther to his core. It comes up. Heart. It comes up sometimes. Well,
I think even just Mono Green Tron playing like one of these in their sideboard, because like it helps them stabilize on the front end. It's good against graveyard decks, which like can be a problem for them. And then you just like have Desist on the back end that you can cast on turn four.
So here's my thought on this. From a Modern perspective, I think the front end is pretty good. I don't think the front end is going to be good enough because I don't think it's aggressive enough in either area. And the back end is so expensive that it's not going to, like, I think there are really good cards that are doing these things that you'd want to play on your sideboards. But
I feel like as a one of in Amulet, for instance, this card is playable.
You might be right, but the thing I wanted to finish by saying was, going back to that format a second ago that we talked about, Highlander, which like is a format where obviously you don't get a sideboard, so you have to put all of the utility cards that exist in Magic's history into your decks. And by the way, the power level of those decks is like, you know, it's Legacy level. When I read the card like this, what comes to mind for me is that the card design we are now experiencing, this is an uncommon, right? It's basically that the same thing that when we are trying to design those decks that we have to focus on, which is like naturalize effects, graveyard hate, and life gain. That's like the three things that I believe those are the same things that Modern decks in their sideboards kind of have to deal with, which is like you have to be able to answer all of those things. A single card that does all those things, we see so much more of that now. We talked about it literally.
It's because of Best of One, right? Like it's because on Arena, one of the most played ways to play Constructed Magic, the most played way of playing on that platform is Best of One, right? And these are the perfect cards to exist for a Best of One format. You can play this card in your green black standard deck that needs like a good versatile answer for a bunch of things. The fact that this cantrips and draws a card no matter what makes it fine, and you'll be able to eat their graveyard shenanigans, and then you'll be able to draw late game against an enchantment prison deck that someone's brewed up and be able to kill all their artifacts.
Yeah.
So like that's why these cards are seeing printed. Now one thing I will say, and it's kind of like I wanted your I'm sad that the fuse mechanic has never come back. I think one of my favorite mechanics of all time, and it's from Dragon's Maze, which is like a famously stinker of a set. Was the split cards that had the ability to be fused, that you could cast both halves at the same time. And I so often wish all of these cards could do that. Like I would
Wear Tear. Yeah.
Like Wear Tear is such a cool card. I'm always surprised that Wizards has just never brought fuse back. Like split cards are cool. They're great, but I always want them to be that. And they never are. One other reason this card might see play in Modern is just, once again, just Cascade decks. Like this type of card is so good in formats that, like the fact that this is a good graveyard hate card that's versatile, gains you life, stabilizes you for one green and a colorless, and you can play it and Cascade and Dorino still, because the back half makes it so big that it doesn't matter, is like also makes it playable. But Fuse, bring Fuse back, Wizards.
I do love Fuse. Yeah, I guess my point that I was making there that you were sort of commenting on is just that, like, the, because obviously Modern is our format we talk about here. You have certainly Best of One, which I've played a ton of on Arena. And I agree with you that I think that that is probably the main reason why cards like this, these modal cards, have become so popular, is for design reasons of that. For literally, if you're going to play a single game of Magic, then a card that reads this way is what you would want to have in your 60 card deck, right? It's the best version of a card that's not totally focused on exactly your strategy.
Right, these catch-all cards that have a worst case scenario still good cards, but are important for Commander, Highlander formats like Highlander Rillette or Canadian Highlander or Gladiator and or Best of One, which is a big format on Arena.
So like the only reason I even bring up Highlander here is only because, like, we always look for in our wheels those cards that can do a lot of things, because you want to have three or four of them in your wheel. And if you go beyond that to Commander, which, like, you know, 100 card Commander deck, there's no restriction. So you're going to play the best version of a card that does that thing in your Commander deck in your colors. Same idea, right? Like, I want to dedicate spot number 100 to this card that can do everything, because I actually want to play cards I'm excited to play that do good things, not these kind of marginal effects. But we're always looking for the same thing, which is don't die to burn. Commander doesn't matter, but in all other formats it does. Naturalize, definitely need that. And Graveyard Hate. Like, I would say in Commander, it's Naturalize and Graveyard Hate. And I would say in, like, any other competitive format, there's a mono red thing you have to contend with. So a card that contends with all three is crazy. And this is not the first one. We've seen a lot of these. They keep printing them. And I guess I like them, but no, I do like them. Yeah, I like them. Just overall, they're very
next card, Escape Tunnel. Land, tap, sacrifice Escape Tunnel, search your library for a basic land card, put it onto the battlefield, tapped, then shuffle. Or we got Strictly Better Terramorphic Expanse, baby. Tap, sacrifice Escape Tunnel, target creature with power two or less can't be blocked this turn. So
card's very good.
Obviously printed to play with the morph mechanic or the new morph mechanic. So it allows you to get your morph creature in for free, and then you're able to then flip it with the rest of your mana to turn it into whatever big thing that you wanted to hit them with, or small thing that has a damage trigger that you want to hit them with, which is cool. Good for me in formats like Modern, where there is a consideration of like, oh, this is an uncounterable way to give an infect creature or some other effect I need to get in. An unblockability feature, something that lets me, you know, get damage in where, like, if I need to get through a blocker. It is Terramorphic Expanse on the other side, which is a not very playable card, but not an unplay. Like, those are always, like, I feel like on the edge of playable, have always been. And this, like, adds something there to it that makes it just that much better. Fascinating card.
I believe when we opened this card in the thing I mentioned earlier, this is one of the cards I mentioned, and somebody made fun of me for mentioning that I thought this card would be good actually in an Infect deck in Modern. Obviously, Infect is not a currently good deck in Modern, which I understand, but it goes in and out of it. Your comment about it always being on the fringe, like a Terramorphic deck, like, I think that's correct in the sense that you might draw this card in the wrong situation as your only land, and it would force you to mulligan because you do not want to have a tapped land on turn two. But you also might draw this card as your third land, and you read this card as, okay, this is fine, but it's also a spell that's going to make my creature kill them on turn three. And I actually think that that's fine. Like, I actually think that's, like, totally okay if, or turn four probably, but, like, I don't know. I've played between multiple formats, a lot of Infect and Double Strike type of decks, and I kind of lean on the side of that second ability is really unique. A Terramorphic Expanse that has, like, a really good combat effect in a one-shot deck is really good to me.
Like, most of the time when you see that on a land, it doesn't cost sacrificing the land, but it costs mana. The fact that it's free to me makes it super interesting, and the fact that it's never dead, because worst case scenario, it's just a tapped land. Mana fixer is a worthwhile include and something to really look at. Not to mention the fact that you can loop it with stuff like Crucible Worlds or the card we talked about earlier, sure. the new green mythic. So yeah. I think that's definitely viable. All right, next and final card. It's a cycle though. And today we're going to be talking about Undercity Sewers. This is a cycle of lands. They have the dual land typing, which means that fetch lands can find them, similar to shock lands, similar to triomes. These are all end of battlefield tapped. They're for two colors. This one's blue, black. And when it enters the battlefield, though, they surveil. All 10 of them surveil one. So this is kind of taking like the temple mechanic and adding it to shock lands and adding it to triomes. And what's interesting to me is that surveil is a powerful mechanic that is like temples have seen a ton of play in every format they've ever been, not every format they've ever been legal to, every standard they've ever been legal in. Being able to then put those cards into the graveyard is a much bigger game and has a lot more value than just scrying, which is already very powerful. Being able to do that off of fetch land, especially like late game, or like on turn one, if you don't have a play, is also very viable. Being able to then like make sure that your next draw at two key parts of the game where having a tapped land enter the battlefield is very versatile. Now, having to draw this card and then this just be a land drop you need to play the turn you need a untapped land source is a real drawback. But having one of them in your deck that you can find when you need it and it offers like ostensibly somewhere between 0.5 and 0.8 of a card when it enters the battlefield is pretty fascinating.
Yeah, I think when I read these cards, there's a couple things that come to mind that are very significant. The first one is that we got all 10 in the cycle. So like we got one set, it has these 10 cards and you have the land types on all 10 of them, which from, you know, multiple formats, obviously we do not have fetch lands in standard, but like, it's a big deal. That's a really big deal. Like these all existing at the same time matters. You mentioned the scry lands and comparing these to them. Putting a card into your graveyard is a way bigger deal than scrying. Like in terms of when you look at a card and you want to get rid of it, there's so much more utility to putting a card into your yard. So right. The surveil aspect is really important. One thing from a Magic product, aficionados, the last couple of years is that with Commander decks and everything, the reprints, we've seen kind of all of the mediocre cards in the land category get reprinted ad nauseum. So it does feel like they need to continue to find ways to print cards that are a little better, like Scrylands and lots of the mediocre, non-playable in Eternal Format.
Reveal a land from your hand, the Snarls or whatever, the check lands.
Filter lands, check lands, they're like all worth 50 cents. Like they get printed in every Commander deck now as the mana base. So they have to find ways to make lands that are a little bit more interesting. Because as you know, if you go back to like Invasion, like when we first started getting our earliest uncommon duels that were decent, like Urborg Volcano, right? Like your black red comes into play tapped from like 1999. That's like a relic, right? Like that's like it's like a legitimate relic. Like, so you think about the stuff they're printing in Commander decks, they wouldn't even be considering a card like that. They would be considering the best version of an uncommon card that gives you two colors. So to me, this is them giving us things that are actually desirable that are not ideal. Because shock lands are obviously better, dual lands and Legacy and Commander are obviously better, like triomes. These are really solid. They're very good. These lands are good. They're searchable. They're like more going to be sought after, and it's going to make all of the check lands and the, like a lot of those lands that get printed in every Commander deck just less good to me. That's the point of these.
Sure. I think these also maybe offer a thing they can include in those lands one day, right? I don't know if these are ever going to be like insanely expensive. So I'm excited to see where they go. I think from a playability perspective, it's just a really interesting choice, right? Like the triumphs are always really interesting. I think the triumphs are problematically interesting because they like offer five color in such a lazy way, not a lazy way, but in like a low stakes way, where these don't do that. But these do offer a, like, I think the, like, what is good enough for a tapped land that can be fetchable? And battle lands aren't it, right? Like the being able to find a land and have it enter the battlefield type the bicycle lands weren't it, right? Like the yep. cycling on a land isn't enough. Try the triumphs are so three mana, three different types of color, and you can cycle for three is like one of the best lands ever printed versus the bicycle lands, which are two colors and cycling aren't playable. So I think it's interesting to see where these come out, right? Like the fact that they're only two colors is worse, but Surveil is a very different beast
than I think cycling. I think it's pretty good, man. Like I really think that like the number of strategies that exist in Magic that want you to put a card into the graveyard is so high that I think these are like, okay, if a Scryland out of 10 all time is like a 3,
mm-hmm.
these are like 5, 5, 6 is my gut tells me. These are like, they're above average for sure. They're not in the top tier, but like, I think they're above average. They might be 6s. Like, I think searchable with put a card in the graveyard is very good.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah.
All right. So that is it for our Murders at Carlov Manor set review. One last thing I want to talk about today before we wrap up is, and this is about MagicCon Chicago. So both me and Ben are going to be going, and there's a lot of cool stuff obviously happening there, but we have two special events that we're hosting at the event on Sunday. The first one is at 10 a.m. I'm the one hosting it. It's my event. Ben has this event later that I might be doing, but my event yeah. is, and it's open to anyone who's there at the show who wants to join. It's free to enter, is a murder mystery event. So basically, I think I'm going to have up to 3 pods of, I believe, up to 20 players where you can participate in a game. It's similar to if you ever played Mafia or the game Werewolf, but you'll be getting roll cards of different Ravnican legends, some of the different characters from this set, Murders of Carlov Manor, everyone from Niv-Mizzet to Rakdos to Atrada. And you're trying to figure out which one of you is the murderer in a group. And we'll be doing it from 10 a.m. onward until we just run out of people that want to hang out and play. And then that is immediately being followed by later that afternoon, Ben's event at 3 p.m., I believe, on Sunday.
3 p.m. Yeah. So first of all, the first time I ever played Werewolf with Alex, which was like the inspiration for this game, obviously, I like sat down and was like, I'm going to game this. And I was like, I'm the werewolf. And I died immediately. And I was like, this game
everyone
sucks.
Just killed him.
So I made a mistake, guys. I learned my lesson. So he was like, don't do that this time, but like, come hang out. So I was like, I'll be there, of course.
Yeah. Werewolf is one of my favorite games. I designed a game similar to this back when Game of Thrones was airing that we would do for every Game of Thrones finale and like an intro party that we were doing, like what's the opposite of a finale? The premiere, finale? Every premiere and finale party we would do during the seasons. And it was like, it allows you, every player has an ability, every player plays a character. There's no like villagers where you don't get to do anything. And then who the murderer is separate from what character you are. So you'll get a separate murderer card. So you could be Taza and still be the murderer, or you could be Tristani and still be the murderer. So like, you'll have different cards that you'll get, two different cards per person, and it's really fun. I recreated it and kind of crafted it specifically for the Ravnica setting, so it's gonna be really fun. I designed it myself, and we're doing it in the MTG Ambassador area. There's like a big area that will be on the floor as well, and if you follow on Twitter, I'll continue to talk about it as we ramp up. I'm gonna start previewing some of the cards, in fact. If I remember for Rick to get it up here, there's a preview card right here of one of the abilities for one of the characters that I'll be sharing cards out as we go.
It's gonna be really fun. Yeah, the Creator Arena is the area that we're gonna be kind of in. It's like this whole cool thing with all of your favorite creators, and we're lucky enough to be included. So I will be there with you guys doing the whole the Murders at Carlov Manor thing he's talking about, and right after we have Alex will be a part of this too as well, obviously. He's going to join me with a few other creators that we know and love for a crazy chaos draft. As you guys know that I love chaos drafts, and I have a stockpile of packs that are insane. And so I decided I want to do like a big one. So we have some friends of ours, Talia Vess is going to be there, and Joe Johnson, and Shivam, and Alex, and Tappy, and it's a great crew. And so a lot of my packs that are going to be kind of crazy ones, like I have like an Urza Saga pack I think I want to open, which is going to be pretty wild. There's like Tempest in there, some really old stuff, Ice Age. And then we have a bunch of crazy collector boosters we're going to open. It's going to be very fun. And I think the goal is to go 3-6. Gavin Verhey, he's obviously one of the all-time chaos drafters like Alex and myself. We're going to do the thing. We're going to draft it. I think everything that gets open, we're going to like do like a, you know, maybe possibly, you know, we draft the rares between the winner kind of a thing. So should be very fun. I'm very much looking forward to the event Alex is running, and then he'll be part of mine as well right after. And so if you're around on Sunday, it should be a total blast. We are very much looking forward to it. Don't go outside. It'll be freezing. You'll legs off. Come hang out with us. We're just going to have the best time. So we'd love to see you there. And yeah, thanks. Yeah,
for other than that, and that's it for today. That's the end of the set review. And you know, make sure to check out all of the sponsor stuff below. Also, we have a Sonic the Hedgehog game coming out called Sonic Roll. It's officially licensed, designed by our team and me and everyone at the Kest Games. So there's links for that below as well. And a bunch of other cool stuff. So make sure to check that out. There's an Amazon link to that. And then also, if you're buying Magic cards, make sure to check out the affiliate link below for TCG Player on top of that. And a big shout out to all the people behind the podcast and everything. Welcome back to 2024. Super excited and excited to see what's coming out of Magic this year.
Yeah, here we go.
This has been a production of Time Traveler Media.